Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, we are hands-on with the brand new Sony PlayStation 5 and Xbox devices. Plus, we're going to take a look at the future of our homes. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. But it is an exciting day because we can finally give you our first impressions of the new PlayStation 5 and the new Xbox devices. John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, is back. John, you've had your devices for, is it almost 2 weeks now?
Yeah, coming up on that, I guess between the Xbox Series X console and the PS5, give or take, we're looking at about 2 weeks, yeah. So I've had a good bit of time to put them through both of them through their paces. So there's a lot of pros and cons to both, but it's definitely a great time to be a gamer.
It is. It's exciting. The I haven't had mine that long now. So I got my PlayStation on Tuesday of this week, and then the Xbox arrived only on Thursday. So I haven't set up the Xbox yet. But let's just kind of recap the hype and the excitement around this, because I know not everybody is a gamer, and I know not everybody gets the hype and the excitement. But a conversation I had at home the other day kind of put it into perspective, in that you change your phone every year or two, like on average. That's the average time that people have it. We haven't had new consoles for multiples of that. So this is a big deal.
Yeah, it is. Like, as you know, the last time these two guys went head to head was 2013 with the PS4 and the Xbox One. So it's 7 years since this kind of generation of consoles have been renewed. I know there's been mid-generational updates like the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X, which was kind of the same consoles but more powerful. So you could get the 4K visuals to kind of keep them on par with what PC was offering. But now with these two new consoles, the PS5 and the Xbox Series X, and then obviously the Series S, these are true next generational leaps for what you can expect from your gaming kind of setup. So yeah, it's a big, big time.
So let's start by talking about the PlayStation, and this is the one that I've had the most amount of time with. The unboxing experience was so exciting. I was like a child on Tuesday afternoon when it arrived and I got to open it out. First impressions out of the box, it's pretty big.
It's massive. There's no denying it. It's about over 15 inches tall and about 10 inches deep. So it's definitely one of the biggest, I think it is the biggest home console ever created. So that's quite the feat in itself. So people will remember the original Xbox, maybe, when that came out. That was quite the behemoth. And when the PS3 came out, was also a bit of a beast. But this just completely trounces the two of them. It's absolutely huge. So all joking aside, you will really need to factor in where you're going to be putting this and if it'll actually fit into your TV stand. So it's just be aware of those dimensions. Give it a quick Google just to see what your shelves are like, because not only is it massive, but as you know, you said it's very futuristic looking. So it's got curved sides on, so as it is able to be put on its side or on a horizontal kind of sitting, but because of its curved top, you can't actually sit anything on top of it, like previous consoles, which are all very flat to kind of slot into TV stands and whatnot. This one, you can't actually put anything on top of it either, because it's so kind of weirdly shaped. So again, something just to be aware of if it is important how your TV stand is laid out.
It doesn't fit into my TV stand.
It doesn't. Like,
no, it's just because it's so tall. And now it is a beautiful looking device. I know, I think you and I, when they after the PS5 announcement, you and I had a discussion on the show, and we were kind of humming and hawing about the new design. And a few people were saying that it looks a bit like a stormtrooper. Other people were saying it looks like a modem. It is beautiful. When you see it, it is gorgeous. Yeah. It kind of, and this is not a good example or comparison to make, but I'm going to do it anyway. It kind of reminds me of the W Hotel in Barcelona. You know, the one that kind of looks like a sail? It looks a little bit like that.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's very tall though, and it comes with this really handy stand because of the curves and so on. It can be a bit tricky to find somewhere to place it. So we now have it on the floor on the stand, and it's just a lovely device. The other thing that struck me straight out of the box was the weight of the controller. It is a bit, it's not like heavy or clunky, but there's a bit more weight to it in comparison to previous versions. Am I right?
Yeah, there's a lot more going on. And thankfully, like I guess from previous console previous PlayStation generations, especially the wireless controller for the PS4, that the battery, it was a light controller, which was great for long gaming sessions, but the battery would always kind of die a lot quicker than what Xbox was offering with their kind of more beefier Xbox One controller. So now with the PS5, the DualSense controller, as they're calling it, it has a much beefier battery. And that's also not only to, you know, make it last longer, but there's also a lot more tech going on inside of this controller. I don't know if you've kind of been playing that Astro's Playroom.
Yes, which I loved.
Oh, it's amazing. It comes pre-installed on every single PS5. So you get a game out of the box straight away, which is brilliant. And, you know, you can call it a tech demo in inverted commas, but it's so much more than that. So this kind of showcases this new controller. And for me anyways, I guess right off the bat, we're going to be talking about all the consoles and the kind of the next generation of gaming. This is one of the best experiences I've had testing both consoles, because they put so much tech into this DualSense. The triggers on the back, which we've been using for years, which you usually just pull down to shoot a gun or whatever it was, they had one kind of setting. But now with the new controller, these can be tweaked on the fly. So as I said, with Astro's Playroom, there's a bit in it where you're a little robot and you're kind of building up tension in a spring in the game, and you can actually feel the tension in the controller, in the triggers on the back. So hard to get across on radio or even in video, but when you play with it and actually feel it for yourself, you're like, wow, this is really cool. So that, with like the built-in speaker, the updated haptics, or should I say like the vibrations in the controller, they're way more refined. So you get little tiny shakes in the left bit or in the left part or the right part, and it's like an iPhone kind of vibrations, which are kind of seen as the holy grail. They're so refined in a controller. So it's just a whole new experience, and they've really knocked out of the park there.
They really have. And it was the controller that kind of blew me away more so than anything else, because as I've said before, I'm not a massive gamer. When I am, it's usually on the Nintendo Switch because it's just easier, and yeah, I love Mario. But I was really, really struck by just how much they crammed into the controller. For those who haven't had a PlayStation in quite a while, or any console in quite a while, the development that's gone on from, like, you know, two or three versions ago of the PlayStation to today is phenomenal. You know, even the touchpad in the middle of the controller, as you said, the different sort of dynamics between the buttons at the back. So like you said about the springs, for example, the sound quality from the controller is unreal as well. And you do feel, particularly in that game, the Astro's game that you mentioned, there was times when I was so glued into it, it almost felt like it was in a virtual reality kind of setting. You know what I mean? It's so immersive. Yeah. Between having the controller sort of resting on your tummy or close to your body, the stunning graphics, the sound, the vibrations, the just everything about it, it was the most immersive. And this is just a demo. Like, it wasn't even, you know, it's not like one of the big titles that we're all super excited about. I was so blown away by it, and I lost about 3 hours of my day just dicking around with it.
Yeah, no, it's really, really fun. And I saw a tweet earlier on in the week where the author said, kind of this demo on the PS5 is the closest you're going to get to a theme park in your living room, because it's so immersive. Like, as you said, the speaker and the controller, like if you have a surround sound system in your home, you're going to get kind of really good audio. But the fact you have a speaker that close to your face, in a way, kind of brings you in even more. Like, you have the little scrapes and the tweaks and the chirps from the robot and whatever actions you're doing on screen. And then the controller's vibrating in tandem. The triggers are kind of tense when you're doing different tasks. It's all just this kind of like visual and sensory kind of fantastic experience, really.
Yeah, I really did. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to, if that makes sense. Because again, I'm not an avid gamer. I was excited for the new consoles just to see what they're like, and from sort of a journalistic point of view, to be really dull about it. But to get it and to have that feeling of excitement as you're going around in this game, it was just fab. I also should note as well that the setup of the console was incredibly easy. I put the PlayStation app on my phone, and it's a really good way, just, you know, for the authentication stuff, you know, those different steps. It's just a much smoother process to do it like that. I haven't played a whole lot else on it yet. I've played one game. I've played like 20 minutes of another game, but just the way the week has fallen, I haven't gotten as much time as I'd like with it. Are you excited by what you've seen so far?
Yeah, already. Like, I guess, like, they're, you know, these consoles are launching with kind of their showcase pieces to get people excited. And they're never really actually going to show the true power of the console for years to come, really. Like, it's always been with every generational You only really see how much kind of oomph or kind of horsepower each of these guys have when the developers learn how to really push them. But even already with the likes of that Astro's Playroom that's pre-built in every console, and then I've been playing Spider-Man and finished the new Spider-Man Miles Morales game, which is coming to both PS4 and PS5, with the PS5 version having spectacular graphics and stunning visuals, and the gameplay is there, and the controllers even implemented with little speakers tweaked when you're shooting your webs, and all these kind of immersive experiences are added to the new controller. So yeah, I'm really excited. Like, PlayStation led the last generation by almost 2-1 in terms of sales, and they're coming into this one strong too with the titles alone they have to launch. So I really am excited to see what comes down the line from both first party titles from Sony's own studios, and then what third-party developers do with the tech as well within the controller and the console itself.
Yeah, the Spider-Man game was the other one that I played for around 20 minutes, and there were, I think, three different moments within the first few minutes of the game where I just kind of was like, wow. Proper, oh my God, this is class. And yeah. I think it surprised me more than I thought it would, because we've all seen, incredible content on our screens, whether it is, something from Blue Planet or whatever. You have those kind of moments. But I think when it's in the middle of gameplay and there's so much going on and you get to interact with different scenarios, it does kind of blow you away that the amount of attention to detail and how they really have embraced every single element of the updated console to provide an amazing experience for the user.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said, the fact it's such early days and we're seeing such amazing visual showcase pieces already, it's a really good sign for how the generation is going to play out. And not to kind of add financial burdens to people listening that don't have kind of 4K setups, but these consoles, these brand new kind of state-of-the-art consoles, were purpose-built to really push 4K TVs to their limits in a way of showing high dynamic range video, gameplay that just has 4K fidelity. That I know you have a nice Samsung setup yourself, and I have a Sony 4K TV with surround sound system, but like that it's literally like you're playing one of the latest Marvel movies. You're literally the main character, and the visuals alone is just next level. It's just so impressive what they've done.
Yeah, I as I said, I was like a kid. I just couldn't get over it, and I had to tear myself away from it because I knew if I played any longer, that would be my day entirely gone. You're listening to Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. I'm chatting to John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, about the new PS5 console. John, I got the disc version. Did you get the disc version or the digital edition?
Yes. Yeah, so I got the disc version as well. So there is two, for your listeners, that there is two PS5 versions launching, as you said. One with a disc drive, one without. Everything else is identical. Storage, processing power, the lot. It's just which one you prefer. If you don't bother with disc games or even 4K Blu-ray DVDs, if that's not your thing, you're streaming more of your content, that's fine. You've got a discless version that's €100 less. So it comes in at $399.
The big question, and I think in the 10 years or so I've been working in the media, I've never had as many DMs on Instagram and Twitter as I've had about the PS5. Everyone going, where did you get it? Where did you get it? Can you get me one? I need one. That they are still like gold dust. Do we have an update in terms of the supply and demand issue?
Ahead of this piece, I did reach out to the kind of the PlayStation country manager, and unfortunately there wasn't anything of note to share, which isn't great, but like, it is incredibly high demand. As you said, you're getting a serious amount of DMs, and the gamers and their mothers want to have this console under the Christmas tree or even before then for this year. But it's just the supply chain just isn't able to keep up with the demand. I just read this morning that Sony PlayStation Japan have come out and said there is no more pre-orders available until launch day. So they're completely out of stock in their home country. So unfortunately, it doesn't bode well for the rest of the country. But that's not to say don't keep an eye, or make sure you keep an eye on the likes of GameStop, Smiths, Harvey Norman, Arnott's, whatever kind of tech provider you usually go with that does gaming consoles as well. They would hopefully be updating their channels, be it their social channels or even their website, to let customers know if there's a new batch coming, if there's availability prior to launch. And then come launch day for Ireland anyways, on the 19th of November, there may be, we just don't know, there may be actual consoles on on shelves in store. I know we might not be able to actually get into the stores, but you may be able to ring to do click and collect or whatever it may be.
Okay, so just have alerts on all of the websites all of the time. And, you know, the fact that Sony HQ are saying that there's issues, Santa may even struggle as well, which is not ideal. How long will it take for the supply chain to catch up? I mean, is this something that's going to run into the next year? I assume they're producing like mad already.
Yeah, well, they have been producing since kind of mid-summer, but I guess with all the COVID restrictions that have been applied across the world, with manufacturing processes being impacted, yes, they're obviously probably burning the midnight oil, getting as many consoles onto it. I know for a fact they're actually like air freighting the consoles around the world rather than shipping them. That's just because it's just quicker to get them into the air, but it's going to cost them a lot more, but that's, they're going to take the hit because they know that the demand is there. So they are working tirelessly to get consoles to every part of the world for their respective launch dates. But again, I don't know, it'll be next year if it really comes push to shove, if you're, you know, that you might see a significant increase in the supply chain for when you can get one.
If someone messaged me on Twitter during the week saying that, you know, they're not a gamer, but they're interested in getting back to it or starting it, is it worth looking at the PS4? Will the PS4 come down significantly in price now?
You would like to think so, but because it's been so successful for this generation, they didn't have to kind of bring the price down as low as they used to do in previous generations. It's kind of been stuck at a nice, I think, 299 price point, if I'm correct. Maybe now, obviously, with the new console hitting shelves, they will bring it down a bit more to make it more enticing. Mm. And you're not being played completely out of the market just yet, you know, with the likes of that Spider-Man game coming to PS4. So you will be able to play that this Christmas on your current console. If you do end up picking up a PS4 for a family member or whoever it may be, you can play that. And even kind of big titles coming out next year, there's Horizon Forbidden West, which is a big kind of first party title that's going to look amazing on the PS5. That is also coming to the PS4. So, you know, there is amazing games, you know, stunning games on the PS4 that people mightn't have got around to, like God of War, The Last of Us Part 2, that you could get stuck into this Christmas if you're just unlucky getting a PS5 in your hands. But yeah, there's definitely good titles there, and the options are there.
What are the titles that you're most excited to try out in the PS5?
Well, I guess we've spoke about Spider-Man. That's, you know, I finished that, and our full review is on the site as we speak. So if people want to, you know, kind of read more about my thoughts, that's there. There's the one I just mentioned, Horizon Forbidden Dawn. You know, there was Horizon Forbidden West is a big one coming next year. And that's just going to be like this open world kind of post-apocalyptic West Coast of America. You're fighting robot dinosaurs. Need I say more? It's just going to look like it's going to be a visual showcase again for the console, and it'll only be playable on PS5. So really counting the days for that one. I know there's a lot of people interested in the upcoming remake of Demon's Souls. So this is a very intense, difficult, you know, hack and slash game where you're taking down demons and taking down skeletons and dragons and whatever it may be. And it looks, it's again another visual showpiece or spectacle for the console, and that's launching on the 12th or the 19th here in Ireland. So that's going to be a launch title, and I'm looking forward to getting my hands on that as well.
Okay, so there's a lot of excitement. I can hear in your voice that you're also like a child on Christmas morning. You're very, very, very excited. John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, is going to stay with us. And coming up next, we're going to chat about the Xbox.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. We're talking about the brand new consoles, the PS5 and the new Xbox consoles. There's a lot of hype around it. I know that there's a lot of excited gamers, disappointed gamers all around the country looking to get their hands on these devices. John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, is with me. So, John, before the break, we were talking through the PS5, which we are both very, very, very excited about. I haven't had a chance to set up the new Xbox yet, but you've had a fair bit of time with it now. Which console did you get, and what do you think?
Yeah, so I've got the Xbox Series X, which is the bigger brother of the two consoles that are coming out from Microsoft. You've got the Series S, which is the smaller €299 one, and then the Series X, which is the €499 one. And that is the beefier one, more processing power, has a disk drive, double the storage. So I've been testing that for about 2 weeks now, and it's an incredible piece of kit, just from a power point of view. You know, they've got some really nice fan-centric kind of settings and features in the console that really will stand to the Xbox fans out there. Like, you know, since 2016, they've been working on their backwards compatibility. And what that basically means is that you can plug in the brand new Xbox, the Series X console, and play titles as far back as the original Xbox on this device. So that may sound easy on paper, but when it comes to a technical standpoint, it's very difficult to make that as seamless a kind of an experience as it is. So Microsoft have done some fantastic work there to make, you know, the entire Xbox One back catalog. So last generation's games for Xbox are all playable on the new Xbox console. So people don't need to worry that they're going to kind of be, you know, not, you know, completely separated from their gaming titles from last gen when they move to the next one. You can play everything you own already on the new console. But just to be aware that if you get the discless version, the Series S, you obviously won't be able to play your disc-based Xbox One games. Just to be aware that some people might think you can do a digital download or whatever. You can't, unfortunately.
Yeah, that is a shame. Let's talk about the design of it a little bit more, because when the box arrived on Thursday morning, I was instantly struck by it's a much neater device than the PS5. It's kind of a black rectangle. It's neat enough that it will slot onto the TV stand. The controller doesn't look a million miles away, but again, you kind of get all the bits that you need within the box, which is so helpful that you don't have to go looking for bloody cables or whatever like that, because that just drives me insane. How did you find the setup and the initial gameplay?
Yeah, like you mentioned, everything comes in the box. You've got a really fancy HDMI 2.1 cable, which is going to kind of future-proof you for your listeners if they don't have to go out and buy the fancy new kind of HDMI format. We won't even get into that because it gets very complicated very quickly, but it's nice of Xbox or Microsoft to pre-package that in the packaging. As you said, setup was a breeze. Like Sony, Microsoft, you know, prefers for you or recommends you download the Xbox app. And it's all, you can do all your customization, all your preferences on the app whilst the Xbox is downloading the settings it needs. I think there's like an update out of the box that needs to be installed on the console. And while that's doing that, you could be tapping away on your phone, signing in, doing all your different kind of preferences, and it makes it much less painful, than using a controller to type in on a keyboard on your screen. As we all know, that's really a pain in the arse. So they've streamlined that process. And yeah, I was up and running in a matter of minutes. Like, it was really, really, really well done.
Yeah, that was something that struck me about the PS5 as well. Just to jump back to that for a second, is that the setup was no longer as arduous as previous. You know, we were up and running within minutes as well. And I, for some reason, have it in my head that the last Xbox took us an age. Like, there were so many different things that you had to set up, and it almost took the joy out of it. That, like, there is something exciting about being able to unbox things, plug it in, and just jump straight to it.
Yeah, no, they know they have to keep it as streamlined as possible. People are going to potentially get these on Christmas morning from Santa, and they don't want to be spending hours signing in and logging in and tweaking and changing settings, that they want to get into their games as soon as possible. So they've logically kind of thought this through and made it as seamless as possible. So kudos to both companies, really.
Yeah, actually, that's a top tip right there. If Santa is bringing one of these consoles, or if you are getting one for yourself, do your future self a favor and suss out your username and your password before you go to log in. That was like the most stressful part of the setup for me. It was like, what is my password? But anyway, we got there and everything is fine.
Yeah, that's a very good idea.
Okay, so what titles have you played? And is there the same wow factor as you had with the PS5?
There is the wow factor, but it's on a different kind of approach, because unfortunately, there isn't some show-stopping launch titles like Spider-Man on the PS5. Xbox have kind of doubled down on previous generation titles like Gears 5, like Forza Horizon, which we love, and they've cranked those up to 11. So both games have got these update patches, should we say, that'll make them sing, you know, on the new consoles. So we've got Gears 5, as I mentioned, running at 4K resolution, 60 frames per second, top-notch visual settings. So it looks like you're playing a AAA blockbuster movie. It sounds like it too, with the Dolby Atmos support. You know, going to Forza, one of our favorite games, Forza Horizon 4 came out 2 years ago on the Xbox One, but that too is getting patched to play better and prettier on the new consoles. So on the Xbox Series X, you'll be able to play Forza Horizon 4 at 4K, 60 frames per second in HDR. And, you know, to be flying across the British countryside in this title at 60 frames per second looks absolutely stunning. So they're really looking after previous generation fans of these big titles and bringing them up to the modern day powerhouses of their new console. So you can kind of jump back in with a fresh coat of paint and it looks stunning.
I remember when you went to the launch of that Forza 4 game and you spoke very well about, you know, how the colours just pop off the screen and you feel like you're fully immersed. It's a great soundtrack. It's a gorgeous game and it's the one that I kind of go back to the most. Is the difference massively noticeable, or is it just because you're looking for a difference that you see it?
That's probably the best way to put it, is that, yes, I'm up to speed. I'm kind of always checking online to see, what am I getting now with this update? Am I going to get, you know, better visuals, or is it going to be better frame rates? And again, for, you know, hardcore gamers, 60 frames per second is always going to be better than 30, because you're getting double the frames or whatever. So it looks smoother, basically, from a gamer's point of view. But that is a good point. Like, it, you know, it was a visually stunning game when it launched. So yes, it's not going to reinvent the wheel. It's not blowing socks off because they've completely changed the graphical engine. It'll look the same, but just look better. That's kind of a contradiction there, I know. But you know, the graphics are the same, but they've improved the frame rate and they've upped the resolution, if that makes sense. So yeah, it'll just look prettier on a 4K TV.
In terms of the Xbox titles, and I like the fact that they're allowing you or enabling you to go back and play previous versions and so on, what are the ones that you kind of have marked in your diary that you're dying to get your hands on?
Well, I guess the Halo is one of the biggest franchises ever on the Xbox consoles. And, it, you know, they were meant to have the next installment launching alongside these consoles, the Series X and the Series S. But unfortunately, just due to COVID and development kind of issues, they weren't able to hit the launch date. So that's missing out its launch window, which really was going to be one of the biggest sellers of this console. Even if you look at the back of the box for the Xbox Series X, you've got Master Chief, the main protagonist from the game, on the back of the box, because he's that big of a part of Halo's or Xbox's franchise. So that is one I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how they kind of, you know, as a, such a showpiece for the console, I can't wait to kind of see how that, you know, it shines next year when it launches, because we still don't have an exact launch date, but it will be next year at some rate. But I do know, like, the likes of the third-party titles from Ubisoft. So you've got the brand-new Watch Dogs Legion, which is based in London. It's kind of a dystopian London post-Brexit. There's drones in the air surveilling the citizens. That's going to get a patch because it's currently playable on the Xbox One and the PS4. So you can buy it for your current consoles. But that will be patched when the Xbox Series X launches. And that will, again, up the visuals to 11. They'll add a feature called ray tracing. And for everyone listening, that basically means better reflections, be it in puddles, be it in windows. And I know that sounds very silly, but it just makes the game a hell of a lot more realistic looking. And you really feel like you're walking around in virtual London with much better visuals and kind of the game. You just get more immersed in the title. So that's going to be what I'm looking forward to testing once they kind of update it for the new console.
Yeah, it's funny when you talk about those tiny, tiny details, it does sound small when you say it. However, yeah, when you notice it within the game, your breath is kind of taken away because it is, as you mentioned earlier, it's almost kind of like you're in a Marvel world or a movie world, and your brain is almost tricked into going, is this animation or is this real life? Some of the pictures in the games that I've seen look so vivid, you would be hard pushed to try and identify if it was, you know, gameplay or an actual scene.
Yeah, no, as you said, the Marvel, like with the Watch Dogs, the London game getting an update, Watch Dogs Legions, or Legion, to have, you know, reflective windows in London, everything looks more kind of immersive and it just looks more realistic. And then with Spider-Man, the big step up for the PS5 version of the new Spider-Man game is, again, something called ray tracing has been enabled. And again, it just means the windows and all the skyscrapers in this New York City are now realistically reflecting the world around you. So you land on a window after swinging across the city and you see your Spider-Man suit in the reflection, and it just looks like you're playing a movie. As I said, it's just so very, very believable and realistic.
If you want to hear more of John's opinions, that's John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net. You can go to TheEffect.net and they have comprehensive coverage of all of this there. John, is the same demand in place for the new Xbox as is the case for PlayStation?
Yeah, along with reaching out to the country lead for PlayStation, I did the same with Xbox, and I got a response back from a spokesperson saying that they've seen overwhelming global demand for the next generation of Xbox, and that they're working tirelessly with their retail partners to replenish Xbox hardware as quick as possible. So they do say to kind of like I said, with the PlayStation 5, to check in with local retailers directly for more details and availability. So numbers are limited there too, but you may have slightly better chance of getting your hand on either, be it the Series X or the cheaper 299 Series S. So yeah, it's still, yeah, they're still light on the ground, unfortunately.
Yeah, that it's so frustrating, particularly when there is such a long walk up to it. I mean, how long have we been talking about this in terms of speculation?
About a year.
Yeah, it does feel like that. I remember even last Christmas we were talking about new titles and whatever. So yeah, I suppose it's just one of them, given the year that it was and so on.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to put you in an awkward position now, right? You have the PlayStation 5 and you have the new Xbox Series X. Someone's going to come around and take one of them away from you. Which one do you give up? Which one do you keep?
I keep the PlayStation.
Why?
Just because it has the experiences that I expect from next gen. And that's, again, I don't want to trounce on what Xbox have done. And it, you know, the console is an incredible piece of kit. And it's got so many nice features to support the older titles in preparation for the new titles. But like we mentioned at the start, you've got that Astro's Playroom demo alone would sell anyone on the PlayStation 5 to go, this is an experience that you've never had before and you can't experience anywhere else but on the console. Like the triggers in the controller that can you get tighter and looser depending on what you're doing sounds so simple, but it's so much, you know, better. It's just so much more immersive an experience, and you know, it's so creative. It's like Mario levels of creativity in that one title alone, and it's free. It comes with every console, so
yeah,
Sony know what they're doing there, and that alone makes me want to keep the PS5.
Yeah, you could totally spend, you know, if Santa does bring one of these, you could totally spend all of Christmas morning just playing that game. I played it
for
ages and I loved it. And what I really liked about it, as sort of not a hardcore gamer, someone who just dabbles, is that it allowed my brain to slip back into console world. You know, it kind of talks you through in a non-patronizing way how to use the different controls, and it makes it all very step by step, but it's not so patronizing that the hardcore gamer that I lived with was annoyed by it. He was like, this is deadly. And so I think they've really, they have played a good one basically by putting that on the console and allowing people to have that as the first thing that you do when you get a PS5, if you get a PS5, just to kind of ease yourself back into it, but also to kind of experience the things that we spoke about at the top of, you know, the spring-like trigger in the back buttons, the sound in the controller, all of those different elements. It's the perfect introduction to the console.
Yeah, definitely. And like I, in my piece, as you mentioned, we have full comprehensive reviews of both consoles on theeffect.net. And I kind of have a whole section of my PS5 review dedicated to the controller and the Astro's Playroom title, just to, you know, how much it means to this kind of console to show this off. And there's so much confidence in the title in itself to say, look, we're not going to patronize you, but if you do this, you're going to have a way better time. And you're like, oh my God, yeah, that's just so clever. It's so cool what you're doing. And across the board, I finished that Astro's Playroom as well, and it's like a beautiful love letter to the PlayStation, you know, generations of consoles. Like there's so many little cute little moments and Easter eggs dotted around. If you've been playing PlayStation since the start, you'll spot them yourself, and you're like, I like what you've done there, Sony. It's a really nice kind of love letter, as I said.
Listening to you talk about both consoles, it does sound like the Xbox. Is it because we had the mid-tier sort of Xbox console a few years ago that it's not as exciting? Like if they'd held off on bringing that one out a few years back, the kind of mid-range or the sort of in-betweeny one, do you think we'd be more excited about the new Xbox?
That's a very good point, yeah. And that, like, because I was using the Xbox One X and I was getting 4K gaming with the likes of Forza Horizon 4, and, you know, I was getting Dolby Atmos. I was getting, you know, really nice, you know, almost next gen features before it was next gen. So it's not as huge a jump for me anyways, going from the One X to the Series X. But if someone's going from the original Xbox to this new one, they're gonna really see, you know, the graphical leap. The speeds alone, both consoles we didn't mention have really sophisticated kind of memory cards or storage, should I say, solid state drives in them. So load times, for anyone that gets really pissed off by games taking forever to load, the load times on these consoles have been like cut down to a tenth. Like it's just like Spider-Man loads up pretty much instantaneously, which is just unheard of in you know, previous generation of consoles, where you're waiting around a minute, 2 minutes even for a game to kick in because it has to load the world in. This is just instant, and it's going to be, pun intended, game changing for people. to when they get back into to gaming. And as I said, Xbox have fan-centric features such as quick resume. So you can have like four, maybe even five games in a kind of a paused state. So you could jump from, you know, racing down the road in Forza Horizon 4 to quickly jumping over to the Watchdog Legion game in London within a matter of seconds, rather than having to boot it up from scratch. So it's that alone, you know, that in itself makes gaming a hell of a lot more accessible and just easier on gamers to get around their favorite titles.
Well, look, if you are waiting for a console or you're looking for us to review one of the titles, email techtalk@newstalk.com. And I'm sure John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, will oblige. John, thank you so much for your time as always.
Thanks, Jess.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
You're very welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Science Week with Science Foundation Ireland takes place from November 8th to 15th. This year's theme is Choosing Our Future, with virtual events and talks focusing on how science can improve our lives in the future and in the present, taking place throughout the country. With this in mind, we're going to look now at the future of our homes. And as I mentioned there, not just the future, but the present as well. And I'm delighted to be joined once again by Tomás McGowan of HereWorks. So Tomás, the last time we spoke, we were chatting about what it is that HereWorks does and the demand for the smartening up and the greater efficiency that comes with having technology integrated into different buildings, particularly around offices and so on. But there's been a lot of talk this week. I think because it's Science Week, people are always looking at, you know, how can we apply new science and technology to make our lives that bit easier? Is there much of a demand at this moment in time for the high level smart technology that we see in some of the fancy offices in the average home?
I think so, although we mightn't yet just realize it the same way. I suppose a lot of what HereWorks is doing with our clients, you know, the big multinationals, MasterCard and Citrix and AIB, we try and, you know, take all this sensor data that is in commercial buildings and roll it up into usable information. In our case, it's the happiness score. But what we try and do is predict the future. So, you know, is tomorrow going to be a wet day, or is the traffic going to be very bad? How will that affect the employees and the wellness in the building? So if you take that back to the home, the domestic situation, we have all these devices now that are kind of, you know, coming online, the likes of, you know, the things that become commonplace, like Alexa and Google Nest and Ring and all these kind of things. And we're creating this ecosystem of smart devices within the home. And the real trick and the magic will be, how do we get, you know, while those devices talk to each other in simple terms to turn on lights and whatever, but how do we actually use all the data and sensors that those devices have to kind of help the occupant of the home? So I think health is going to be a huge thing.
And so, you know, at what stage do we need to be having these conversations, you know, because it's very easy to look back and say, God, it would have been great to have this type of technology 5 years ago and it would have made X, Y and Z that bit easier. Are we already thinking in this way when it comes to the home? And, you know, does it need to be a part of the conversation at the very outset of any new builds?
At the design stage, I think so. I mean, at the moment, it's very much consumer led. So, you know, it's as I said, the kind of Alexas and you know, it's obviously you had the early adopters, and then you know that, but it's become so normal now that you know, you talk to Alexa, but nobody's really planning it. Well, there are some. Sorry, I take that back. Really planning it at an early design stage. So to actually say, well, what smart technologies are we going to put in this building? And I think in 10 years' time, when we see things getting really, really smart, you know, we think of smart lighting, but at the moment it's just a bulb you retrofit into your light fitting. In the extreme, it's a lighting control system that sits in your, you know, beside your fuse board. But I believe, you know, the house of the future will actually won't have, you know, traditional light fittings, might have illuminated walls, you might have integrated televisions. Air filtration is another thing. And funny, I was actually talking to a colleague of mine, Ying, and she's from China, and she was telling me that her, you know, where her parents live, they have air filtration built into the home. like we have central heating. And just, it got me thinking about what we're doing in the commercial buildings as well, where we're really testing air quality and we're looking at particulate matter. And when you research that, there's actually been links now to particulate matter, maybe obviously not causing COVID-19, but aggravating it. And I think air quality is going to be really key. So how do we design that into our new homes? I also think when we see these ecosystems really grow out, we're talking smart mirrors, smart toilets even. I've seen toilets that will actually analyze what goes into them. So yes, I think at an early stage, architects and engineers are going to be looking to see, well, what actually smart technology is going to go in here. And I think that will actually bring along a new breed of tradesperson as well. So, like a plumber and electrician, you might have a master systems integrator that's actually going to, I suppose, make all this technology work within the building and work at a design stage too.
I'm really interested in the benefits of this going beyond the convenience factor. So at the moment, I've said it a million times, when I go home, I can tell Google to turn on the lights, I can tell her to turn on the TV and play a particular show, remind me to buy certain things in the shops, all of those things. And it's helpful and it's cool to have. But you've alluded to it there a few times, particularly in the office space, that there are benefits from, a health point of view, from a well-being point of view, from a mental health point of view. All of these different things can be sort of aided by this smart technology. Can we do the same thing to replicate that in the home then as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you see a lot now about... Again, it's AI taken to the next level. If you have a smart mirror, a smart toothbrush, a smart toilet, a smart wearable, now all these devices in scales, now all these devices are talking to each other and they can prompt you to say, look, Jess, you're not looking great today. Maybe you should, you should consider eating more vegetables, or, maybe you should, take a rest.
It's going to turn into my mother. The technology is going to turn into my mother.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
I do certainly believe, I think health is really going to be a big driver, obviously energy as well. And that has been the driver to date. I mean, all new homes now are pretty much A-rated. We've got heat pumps in them, so that to me was the first step towards a smart home. But I think that, again, in 10 years time, we'll really be seeing really usable data and the house kind of telling us, your energy bills were unusually high yesterday. This is what you did. This is what you should do tomorrow to counteract that. The other big thing, in terms of the future of the technology within the home, but actually look at the future of the home itself. I know there's been, a lot of controversy about the kind of PRS scheme, the large boards in Dublin. But in reality, I think that has a huge part to play in the future. And it's not all bad. In fact, the level of service you get from, living in, one of these apartment blocks that's owned by a single landlord, they're running these are like hotels. They're all about the customer experience, whereby, your every need is catered for. So it's your home, but if something goes wrong, you have the maintenance people there to sort it out. You have, people organizing activities. You have, even from an energy point of view, you have, your benchmark against your neighbors to see, look, why am I using more energy than the others? So I think actually how we live is going to change as well. We're building some houses out in, our McKeown Group are building some houses out in Malahide at the moment. And of course they have electric, car charging points, which is obviously very important. But, in 20 years' time, will anyone actually own a car? is another thing. So, do front gardens change? There's a whole shift there that I think will impact on really what technologies will be within the home.
Yeah, like we all think that we have it worked out and our generation has it better than any other generation. But sure, the generation that's coming up behind us are going to have it better again, and things that we can't even imagine are going to happen and going to occur. One thing that I'm curious about, you mentioned the likes of the Google Nest and the Amazon Echo devices and the Ring doorbell. As this becomes more of the norm and more incorporated from the outset, from the architect's point of view and so on, Will we see less sort of individual tech brands, or will they all have to talk to each other in a seamless fashion so that if you do have a preference in terms of the user interface of one particular model versus another, that it will then talk to whether it is, you know, your water usage, your electricity usage, all those different things? Like, the interconnectivity of these things is vital, isn't it?
It's absolutely vital. And, you know, I mentioned that ecosystem and even that new breed of, you know, systems integrator. They, you know, need to make sure that everything talks together, that these are not all individual things. So rather than, I suppose, you know, now we have an Alexa Dot that you plug into your, you know, plug into the wall, perhaps they'll actually be, you know, those microphones will actually be built into the walls of a smart building. And so it's, you know, it'll become as commonplace as a light switch. You know, it can turn on any light. I think that is absolutely critical, because if you've all these, you know, what scares people at the moment, I think, is that, you know, if you buy an Alexa, you have to connect to a light bulb, and, you know, it is quite confusing actually to get everything to talk to each other. So I think, yes, that's where your early design comes into place. And I think the manufacturers, no more like technologies, will start to merge and start to, you know, collaborate. And, you know, yes, you have this ecosystem of interconnected devices.
We're seeing the cost of all types of technology coming down. And I think looking at cars is a good example, because a few years ago, to have, you know, whether it was Bluetooth in your car or whatever, would have been looked upon as sort of a notion's extra. It was something that you would pay extra for, the heated seats, all that sort of stuff. But now we're seeing entry-level cars having decent, like really decent technology integrated at the base price. Are we going to see that same thing happen when it comes to our homes in the future?
Yeah, I think so. And I've seen a couple of developers. I know of one particular down in Wexford that kind of, they have partnered with a technology company that will actually, you know, when you buy the home, you can then, you know, you get an added extra. The home is pre-wired for smart, if you know what I mean, which isn't way out there. It's just kind of additional Cat 6 points around the place. But then you pay a little added extra to, you know, to get the devices actually installed, the doorbell, the cameras, the smart speakers. Will it push the price up, or will it become standard? I think it'll become more and more standard. There'll always be, you know, you refer to luxury at the start again, and that's a lot of people, when they think of smart homes, they think of luxury. You know, they think of the cinema rooms and integrated audio and all that kind of stuff. So there'll always be a luxury offering, but I think the basic offering, you know, the voice control of the lights. We already see it, as I say, with the heat pumps and underfloor heating systems and zoned heating systems. That just becomes the norm, and it becomes, you know, what is expected by the user. And I think that then, obviously, like every other technology, as it becomes more commonplace, it drops in price.
The you mentioned earlier on about retrofitting things. So whether it is, you know, the smart light bulbs and so on, is there good tech out there right now if somebody did want to retrofit their home with any type of sensor going beyond, you know, just the temperature control? But if they wanted to have sensors to check their air quality and so on, does stuff like that exist that is easy for the average punter to just retrofit into their home today?
In terms of air quality, I've seen a number of them in the commercial arena. In terms of the actual domestic arena, I'm not 100% sure. I know, I think possibly Philips do like a type of, a smoke sensor or a smoke head that can measure, I think, particulate matter as well. But I haven't seen it mainstream, to be honest. But I think air quality is going to be a huge, huge driver of technology into the future.
It's interesting. I think when I was at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas earlier this year, there was a lot of talk about health tech, and it goes so far beyond just wearing a wearable on your wrist. And it's things like, you know, having a weighing scales connected to your fridge so that if you opt to change your diet and so on, it'll then provide you healthy menu options, scan what's in the fridge and say, here's how you make, you know, a healthy omelette, or I don't know what healthy food is, but you know what I mean, like that type of thing. And I completely I don't get freaked out by that. I don't think it's something from the Jetsons. I think it's something that once you are aware of it and you're aware of, you know, the fact that you still have free will and you can ignore it if you want, it is something that we do stand to benefit from.
Definitely. It definitely is. Now, I suppose that, as always, the big concern is security. And, you know, with all these devices, you know, cameras, speakers, you know, they can, you know, they can theoretically be hacked. And, you know, we did see, I think back maybe it was a couple of years ago, there was an attack on a couple of smart home devices, which was then used to, I think, do a denial of service attack on a couple of sites on the internet. But if it's an invasion of privacy, and we used to hear about the, you know, the baby monitors being hacked, the CCTV cameras being hacked, if there's a big case of that, it will set smart homes back a bit, I think. So I think manufacturers have to be really, really careful to really design super security into their devices to give consumers the confidence. Because, yeah, you can't, you know, we all become complacent when technology becomes commonplace. But, you know, all it takes is for a breach to scare people.
Yes, indeed. Well, look, thank you so much for your time. That was Thomas McKeown of HereWorks. Thomas, it's always great to have you on the show, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Delighted. Thanks, Jed.
For more on the 25th anniversary of Science Week, visit scienceweek.ie. And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. But don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Pocket Cast, the Newstalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts from. John Fardy's up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.